What did I just do?
You did what you had to do, I guess. If it was right, you would have gone through with it. That's what I think, anyway. Amy, marry me.
What?
Marry me.
Huh?
You said it before, we're just alike. Why don't we, Amy?
Why don't we, Robert?
Bobby, 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 baby, Bobby will be Bobby.
Marry me, and everybody will leave us alone.
Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, two-time Canadian Podcast Award nominee and your self-described Sondheim expert. I swear that this company season is becoming more and more perfect, and I wish that I could say that I planned it, but I absolutely didn't. However, getting married today does make for a somewhat appropriate Valentine's Day episode. An expression of nervous love from the character Amy, or at least she eventually gets to that point. Another expression of love is the patrons of the show, especially new patron this week, Will White. Yes, he's also been a guest. It's not a prerequisite to show up on the show in the future, at least not yet. But if you do get any type of enjoyment from this show, consider supporting me on Patreon. You can join other supporters over there. I upload some additional audio, and I'm also developing even more goodies to showcase over there. Every little bit helps. The regular podcast will always be free. But I do want to say that if it in any way causes you financial hardship, do not feel the need to give money. What you can do instead is leave a review and ratings in apps like Apple Podcasts, which very much help the show reach new listeners. And if you feel extra eager, you can tell somebody about the show. Just like open your window and yell at the next random person to pass by. I got a fascinating email from Jay Greenspan this week, and you can always send feedback to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. He says of last week's podcast, "Really nice podcast this week, smart discussion, and having the piano at the ready was great. It's been interesting to hear the discussions about company as someone who, one, doesn't like the show, but loves the music. Two, is older. It was kind of hilarious to hear you guys talk about an answering service. And three, lived in New York City. I won't bore you with all the details, but for me, company feels like someone who hasn't experienced a relationship writing about relationships. Quite shallow. Another 100 people, for me, is a straight-up celebration of New York, a city I love dearly. Keep it up." So thank you so much for sending that in, Jay. What I appreciate is that even though you don't really like the show all that much. I mean, we can't all be perfect, right? But even though you don't like the show, you still seem to be enjoying the podcast. So thank you so much. I'm glad you're finding the conversations worthwhile. I'm also struck by your feeling that Another 100 People is like a quintessential New York song. I feel like I want to play this while I'm seeing the revival of company, maybe like walking down the street to the theater when I go and see it at the end of March. One small programming note, you may have noticed that I normally include a bit of audio at the end of each episode. This week, it'll be a tad longer as I follow through on a promise made in this episode. So that's all I'm going to say. I think we've reached that time again for plodding along. This is the part of the podcast where I describe what is currently happening in the plot. So a new vignette has started. Robert is trying to get Amy and Paul to the church so that they can get married. Paul is missing his cufflinks, and Amy is in an extreme state of panic. Paul sings of how he's excited to marry the love of his life. Amy imagines a church lady singing her fears about the wedding. And Amy begins a frenzied list of reasons why she's not going to get married today. At the end of the song, she calls off the wedding for real. Let's thank some sponsors, and then when we return, we'll talk about the song Not Getting Married with guest Hallie Casey. Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This week, Putting It Together is sponsored by Inventures. Inventures is your chance to connect with the best and brightest in global innovation. You can join 4,000 plus creative and curious minds on the frontier of innovation. You can hear more than 250 speakers on 6 program tracks, including, and this will become way more relevant when you hear more about Hallie, Agriculture in the Technology Age. Inventures connects entrepreneurs and startups with venture capitalists, angel investors, service providers, and thought leaders. The conference includes an education track for students too. Alberta Innovates is making all of this possible in Calgary from June 3rd to June 5th. Tickets are only $399 if you buy before the end of April, and if you're a student, you can get an early bird ticket right now for just $99. Get your tickets today by going to InventuresCanada.com. That's Inventures, InventuresCanada, InventuresCanada.com. This week, Putting It Together is also brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network. Let's hear from one of the great shows.
Hi, I'm Emily.
And I'm Brienne, and together we make Emily Missed Out, a podcast where Emily and I dig into the long list of films that she hasn't seen yet.
It's a very long list.
Totally long list. And help her catch up on all of the pop culturally relevant lines, characters, scenes, and tropes that she may have missed out on.
We're also a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. You can find us online at albertapodcastnetwork.com or wherever you find your podcasts. Join us for my pop culture education.
Yeah.
Hallie, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
This is going to be so fun, I think. I think we need to do this right away. Maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit and tell people what it is that you do.
Yes, my name is Hallie Casey, and I was a theater kid in high school, but am not professionally affiliated with the arts. I am in agriculture, and I have a podcast where we talk about agriculture and food systems, which is called One to Grow On.
Yeah, I think Sondheim has had a Missy musical of his to talk about the agricultural history of the United States.
Oh, yeah. I feel like be a good fit for Sondheim to kind of capture a lot of the nuances there.
I bet.
A little more room for some lyrics and stuff like that. Like, you would need a lot to talk about that.
How do you find yourself in that? Like, what, I guess, attracted you or inspired you to continue into agriculture?
Well, I actually got a scholarship to college, but I had to study something related to agriculture. So my plan was originally to get a BFA in theater and then to just like also get an ag degree so I could keep the scholarship. And then I quickly realized that I did not want to be a BFA in theater and instead just studied agriculture, and I've loved it ever since.
That's really fascinating. So tell me, I've listened to a few episodes of your podcast, but just for people that have not, what is it about? Like, how do you structure it? What do you talk about?
Yeah, I mean, it's me and my dad, and my dad does not really know anything about food or agriculture. Like, you know, most people don't. It's one of those funny subjects that everyone is like, it's related to everyone, but so many people are far away from it and like don't know that much about a lot of just like the basic history and basic information of food and like where our food comes from. So my dad usually like will tackle a topic that a lot of people have questions about, and we'll go in and we'll dig into it and we'll dive into it. And my dad brings tons and tons of good dad jokes, and I bring all the ag facts.
You know, what I really appreciate about it, I don't know if I've actually even said this on this podcast or not, but I grew up on a farm, so I kind of know some of this stuff. I mean, obviously here in Canada, so it's a little different, but yeah, we raised cows when I was growing up. I was actually in 4-H for 10 years, so basically
you're kidding. That's so cool.
Yeah, so I raised a calf from, you know, from when it was born all the way up to when it had to go to market. Been around like crops and stuff like that because of my uncles and stuff like that too. I always feel interesting because now I'm like this, like, you know, hip urbanite as I try to make myself.
Country boy turned city, yeah.
That's right. And I always find myself, when I get into those conversations when people bring this up, that there is that kind of disconnect. It's like, oh, you don't actually know what you're talking about when you're talking about like farmers or like farming practices. And there is that disconnect between how food actually gets made and actually how it ends up in your store. And so it's it's just an interesting observation when you notice that people are like, oh, you don't actually understand how agriculture works, and it's so important to everyone's daily life.
Right. And I think it's so fascinating. So I love the opportunity to just like geek out and talk about like super dorky farm stuff for like an hour.
I guess like you said, you were going to school with that BFA in mind. How did you get introduced to Stephen Sondheim for the first time?
Well, yeah, no. So it was Sweeney Todd. Mm. My mom loves Sweeney Todd. And she would like once a year at least have us like sit down as a family and watch the Angela Lansbury version.
Nice, nice. Great.
Yeah. So like from there, my love just like exploded. And I loved Gilbert and Sullivan, which I feel like a lot, some like Stephen Sondheim, like the one we're going to be talking about today, like a lot of that feels inspired by like some of the Gilbert and Sullivan songs.
For sure.
And so I always like was very drawn to musical theater. And then as soon as I discovered Sondheim, I was like, oh, this is so exciting. This is all like new stuff. It's like so different from like Rodgers and Hammerstein and all like the, you know, old school stuff.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think people have this idea of what musical theater is. And then the subsection was like, well, this is actually a Stephen Sondheim musical, which is different again from what most people kind of have in their heads about what that's going to be. How about Company specifically? What's your history with Company?
Company is one of the like Sondheim shows that I love very deeply, but definitely came to later in like the chronology of me experiencing Sondheim shows. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I watched Company was in college. I've never actually seen a live production of it. I have watched I've watched recordings of shows with questionable legality, right?
Sure.
But I've never actually seen it done because I think for many reasons, it's not one of the shows that's very commonly put up in like regional theaters. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of different recordings of like different productions of it, and I just loved it.
Well, we get to talk about Getting Married Today, and this is pretty famous in many circles because this is the one where a woman sings very, very fast inside of it.
Right.
So I always like to give out this little fun fact here, which is there is a moment where 68 words are sung in the total of 11 seconds.
11 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. And for a long time, that was like the record, right?
Yeah. It was not until Hamilton came out where it was even beaten. And then it was like destroyed because David Diggs was able to do 19 words in 3 seconds, I think it was. Like he goes on a tear in Guns and Ships. I'm taking this horse by the reins, making red coats, weather with blood stains. Feel I'm never gonna stop until I make a drop, I run them up and scatter the remains down. Watch me engaging them, escaping them, and raging them out. I go to France for more fun, I come back with more guns.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally true, but I feel like they're kind of birds of a different feather because in Not Getting Married Today, she actually like sings it and there is like a melody that she has to go along and like she's like changed, like it's like really intricate, whereas Guns and Ships, like it's extremely fast, but like he really doesn't sing along a melody the same way that Not Getting Married Today is.
Yeah, I guess it's the difference between like rhythm and melody, right? So he has the rhythm, boom, 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 he's going. And then this one's like, they have the extra added benefit of like, you need to do this on a melody and like hit this in time. Like it's,
exactly.
It's there's a lot of stuff you have to do.
Yeah.
This is from the character of Amy, although renamed to Jamie in the 2018 revival when they gender swap some key roles. But I always like to give credit to the actors who have portrayed these in the past. So in the original Broadway cast recording, it was Beth Howland. In the 2006 revival, it was Heather Laws. And then when it was renamed to Jamie and cast as a male, it was Jonathan Bailey in the 2018 revival. And even though there is a vicar character who kind of sings her thoughts in the background, the other main character in this one is Paul, who was played by Steve Elmore in the original Broadway cast, Robert Cunningham in the 2006 revival, And then I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Alex Gaumond, I think, in the 2018 revival. So this is how it starts. So we are supposed to have a church lady. That is what the actual role is called in the text. So the church lady is standing up here at the altar.
Well, isn't that special?
And she sings this, "Bless this day, pinnacle of life, husband joined to wife, the heart leaps up to behold this golden day." And then Paul comes out and says, "Today is for Amy. Amy, I give you the rest of my life to cherish and to keep you, to honor you forever. Today is for Amy, my happily soon to be wife."
And to keep you, to honor you forever. Today is for Amy, my happily soon to be wife." Amy.
Now, here's where I'm going to just do a very brief update, because again, in the 2018 version, it's a little bit different. So in the 2018, it's the church lady says, "Bless this day, pinnacle of joy, boy unites with boy, the heart leaps up to behold this golden day." And then Paul says, "Today is for Jamie. Jamie, I give you the rest of my days to cherish and to keep you, to honor you forever. Today is for Jamie, my lover, my partner, my life."
"Today is for Jamie. Jamie, I give you the rest of my days to cherish and to keep you, to honor you forever. Today is for Jamie, my lover, my partner, my
But just as a setting of the scene, what are your feelings towards this, segue into this song?
I love the kind of classic Anglican church, like, backdrop with this, like, very high soprano singing this intro and kind of a slower, slower pace. I think it's just so brilliant in terms of, like, setting up that contrast that you get, like, later when she starts speaking really quickly. So I think this is awesome, and I love just, like, throwing Paul in there as, like, "Oh yeah, everything's fine."
Yeah, right. I think it's so true. I find that in a few different songs I've discussed here already, that Sondheim is playing around with these kind of, like, juxtapositions of two opposite things throughout. Yeah. And here it is, like, we're starting kind of slow, we're talking about how great this day is going to be, like, you almost are like, oh, we're setting something up to fall here. It's
right.
Like classic
right.
comedy, set something up and then have it drop out from underneath the characters as we kind of go
right.
through.
And it's very, like, upright, and it's very proper, and it's very kind of refined, right? And she really is, like, is very kind of almost regal in, like, the way that she stands up there, and, like, she's, like, singing this beautiful, like, high soprano. And then, like, once we get to Amy, she's, like, falling apart, like, literally just, like, on the ground. Like, she's just freaking out. And so I just love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that you need these people to set this up and to mm-hmm. make Amy's part, like, land just so well. I mean, there's this great, I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but there are these great videos you can find on YouTube. And I think it was, like, a PBS special or something like that, but it's of Stephen Sondheim, like, teaching university students how to sing some of his songs.
Yeah. I watched that on YouTube when I was like preparing to record this.
And this song is in it. And it's really fascinating because he gives barely any instruction to the Amy in that, because she kind of nails her part really, really well.
Yeah.
And all of his feedback is to like these two people. It's like, you sing to her instead of singing to the audience. You need to have her be the only person that's in your world, which is like, oh, that's an interesting note for the Paul character. And then he's giving like word choices of like where to do a breath and where to pause slightly in the singing of the church lady. And it's like, oh, this is really fascinating. He's taking so much time to make sure that's set up.
Hold on 1 second, David, address that to her. Address that to her. So you have somebody to play with. You're fixed on the congregation. You're fixed with hysteria on the congregation, and he's just trying to. If the congregation's in your head, but he is saying, "Ah, you're terrific. Today's for you. This is the you is what I want to get. I want to get that feeling once more. You start."
And then he's like, "Are you hitting the rhythm? That's all that really matters. Hitting the rhythm and the melody,
right?
And you're gonna get and through this."
Right. And then when he's talking to the church lady, he's like specifically giving her notes on like, you're in her head, right? You're not in the real world. You're in her head. So you need to deliver these words like so that you're conveying this massive amount of emotion that she is feeling and communicating to us through her words. But like, you need to like really push on those words so that like we feel that from you and from her. And So such a brilliant way to set up a mental breakdown.
Well, yeah, it's important because we start up here like very positive, but the church lady goes very dark later on in this show, in the song, I should say. One last note about that little video. Everyone should watch it because I love it. Part of it is like Sondheim is like in this little chair. He starts to lean over as she's singing, and you can tell like he's like totally into it, and he gives this like huge smile when he sees that she's like nailed her part. But I almost feel like he's about to fall off his chair every time I watch that, because he leans so far over just to make sure that she's gonna get what she needs to do.
I think I had that. Let me see if I had that singer's name pulled up. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, because I was trying to see if I could figure out who that was or if she went on to do anything specific.
Yeah, she did. Let me see if I can get her name, because she was in Broadchurch and she was in Golden Girls. I think she did a lot of more stage work, but she had done some TV stuff, so when I googled her, she came up.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I know there's someone super famous. I just didn't realize who it was.
No, I don't think she ended up like being particularly well known, which is wild because she just nails that performance.
Yeah,
like,
she does it so well.
To watch it. Well, I can't find it, but maybe I can send it to you for later.
That's great.
Oh, wait, I found it.
Oh, great.
So her name was Jane Whitenshaw.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I'm going to have to look up and see what other stuff she's actually done. So this is when Amy comes into the picture. I just want to mention a couple different things. Number one, I just mentioned how, like, 68 words in 11 seconds. So Beth Hallen sings this pretty fast. I will say, Heather Laws in the 2006 version, I think, sings it even faster. Like, she rips through this. And then Jonathan Bailey sings it slower than the original does, which throws me off, too. I don't know. I guess it just because of the fact that it's, like, the original, I feel like the Beth is, like, the gold standard. So it's like, are you going faster or the same speed? Like, faster or the same speed? We have to do either one of those.
Right. For some reason, this is, like, maybe it's because it's so hard. But this is like one of the songs that sometimes you'll see when people put together variety shows, or like, you know, people come out and they just do like a one-off song. And there's a version that Julie Andrews did of this song, and it is great. But she does slow it down a little bit, but she sings like all three parts, and it's insane to watch.
And I'm going to really check that out.
Yeah, it's so good. It's possibly one of my favorite versions of the song.
Today is for Amy. My happily soon to be. Wife. Pardon me, is everybody there? Because if everybody's there, I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do, and not a word of it to Paul. Remember, Paul, you know the man I'm going to marry, but I'm not, because I wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. Thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
And then there's a version that Carol Channing did on some television show, I think, and she slows it down so slow. Like, she's basically just speaking the words. Like, they're like, it doesn't really sound very sped up at all, which is so interesting.
A little jazz standard and stuff like that. Yeah. Hey, everybody, listen here. Yeah. My goal is to actually get this to a point where I can speak it pretty fast, and I'm going to put that at the end of the episode today, but fingers crossed I can actually make that happen. But this is what Amy says. part of me is everybody there because if everybody's there, I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do. And not a word of it to Paul. Remember, Paul, you know the man I'm going to marry, and I'm not because I wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. But I thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Pardon me, is everybody here? Because if everybody's here, I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do, and not a word of it to Paul. Remember, Paul, you know the man I'm going to marry, but I'm not because it wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. Thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Yeah, so this is like this stream of consciousness, of course, that she's just spouted up here. But I guess the big thing that I really want to nail down here is that even though this is like her speaking fast and we can tell that she is like frantic and not handling things very well, I still understand everything that's going on. I understand every word that she's saying here as well. So it's not like it's just like a flurry of speech.
Right. That's definitely true.
Is there any particular lyric that you like from this section?
I love the part where she says, like, I'd appreciate, thank you for coming to the wedding, but I'd appreciate going even more.
Yeah.
Like, she's in the middle of this breakdown that's like she's slowly spiraling downwards, but she's still like trying to maintain her composure and be polite and like think of other people's feelings before her own. And I feel like that is a very accurate depiction of like how many women deal with stress. And I just I love how she is like still holding on to that piece of decorum, and she's like still trying to manage it and like look presentable and like be gracious and like be a hostess at like her own wedding when she's like spiraling out. Ugh.
I think I appreciate this even more now that I've attended a few different weddings in my life. Mm-hmm. I have never been married myself, of course, but this is like, it is high stress and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff going on that day and everything is just a little bit heightened in emotion, I find. And she's able to do this very well. It's like, I'm still being like a hostess and I'm still like thanking everyone here, but also get out. Like, I don't
right.
want you to be here.
Exactly, right. I don't want to be here. I don't want you to be here.
Yeah.
And she, like, mentioned, she's like, talking about how she doesn't want to get married, and she doesn't want to get married. And then she says, you know, I'm not going to marry Paul because I wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. And so she's still, like, thinking of other people, and she's like, oh, well, I'm the worst, and I can't be here, and I need to leave, and, like, everything's going wrong. But, like, my, like, fiancé is incredible, and, like, you're great for coming, but, like, please, I can't handle this.
I can't do this. Well, the church lady returns here then, and now we're kind of listening to the psyche of Amy here, which is, bless this day, tragedy of life, husband yoked to wife, the heart sinks down and feels dead. This dreadful day. And so then Amy launches into, listen, everybody, look, I don't know what you're waiting for. A wedding, what's a wedding? It's a prehistoric ritual where everybody promises fidelity forever, which is maybe the most horrifying word I've ever heard, and which is followed by a honeymoon where suddenly he'll realize he settled with a knight and want to kill me, which he should. So listen, thanks a bunch, but I'm not getting married. Go have lunch, because I'm not getting married. You've been grand, but I'm not getting married. Don't just stand there. I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Cufflinks.
They're on the dresser. Right next to my suicide note. Listen, everybody, look, I don't know what you're waiting for. A wedding, what's a wedding? It's a prehistoric ritual where everybody promises fidelity forever, which is maybe the most horrifying word I've ever heard, and which is followed by a honeymoon where suddenly he'll realize he's settled with a net and want to kill me, which he should. So listen, thanks a bunch, but I'm not getting married. Go have lunch, because I'm not getting married. You've been grand, but I'm not getting married. Don't just stand there. I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today. Go, can't you go?
I like the fact that the constant refrain here is don't tell Paul, like he's not gonna find out.
Right, he won't notice if I don't come.
Yeah, I know that before we started recording here, you mentioned how much you like this part about when she comes in here the second time.
Yeah.
What about this is like so iconic for you?
I mean, I just think it's so, like, it perfectly moves along her train of thought where you're like, I can really clearly see that you're just like straight shot down and like you're very quickly deteriorating. And she's like, a wedding? What's a wedding? Like, she's just like, like the whole concept of a wedding to me is now abhorrent because like, this is how stressed out I am.
Right.
And she says, she talks about how Paul would be like saddled with a nut and like want to kill her, which he definitely should. And so she's like continuing to harp on herself and talking about how she is like the thing wrong with the relationship and the thing wrong with the situation and the whole wedding itself. But she also talks about like the idea of a wedding and like how that itself is stressing her out, which I feel like that makes so much sense. Like she talks about the word fidelity and how much she hates that word.
Yeah.
I feel like this makes so much sense because the idea of a wedding is like huge and it's this huge symbolic thing. And if you feel like you yourself are not ready to like cross that line, then it's both like it's on you. And it's also like how huge this like insane symbol is. And it has to be like what everyone thinks it is. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be like what you want it to be. It's like everyone else's idea of what a wedding actually is.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing about weddings in and of themselves is they are at their core kind of pageantry anyways. Like it's not really about the people getting married. It's for everyone that you've invited to come to the wedding because you're on display. You're kind of performing for everybody. It also kind of reminds me, if you are in high stress situations, there's going to be some times where you get to the point like, why are we even doing this? Like, right. That you get, everyone gets to that point. Like if you're on a vacation or even anything that like things go wrong, it's like, why are we even doing this? This is pointless. Everything is dumb. why even bother doing anything?
Yeah. The rhyming here in this whole song is so like good and clever. And I just love how he like bounces back to the same rhymes while also incorporating other rhymes throughout the like lines, which is very Sondheim, but I feel like fed up. It's exceptionally like impressive.
Yeah, it's kind of all those internal rhymes. He's intentionally not making the ends of lines rhyme, but there's definitely that internal rhyming that he's doing inside of these words. But you mentioned something specifically that I really wanted to bring up because she mentions that where everybody promises fidelity forever, which is maybe the most horrifying word I've ever heard. I have a question for you, because I feel like this could be read one of two ways. Is the fidelity the most horrifying word she's ever heard, or is it the forever part?
Oh, I always assumed it was fidelity. But now that you mention it, like, I wonder if it is forever.
I only mention because actually both of them she hits like, in any version.
Right.
Fidelity forever. And then, which is maybe the most horrifying word I've ever heard. I think we're meant to think it's fidelity, but I feel that there's a way you could read this being it's the forever part, which is like the most horrifying thing she's ever heard.
Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. I love that reading of it.
But if we are to think of it as fidelity, this is something that I keep returning to here about this show specifically, about how different this is from, I guess, previous musicals and previous even popular entertainment. Company is definitely not the first show to ever come out to be like, you know, dealing with like marriage and relationships and that sort of thing. But I do think it's interesting how they are somewhat dealing with the fact is like, hey, fidelity, being with the same person for the rest of your life, that's kind of weird, isn't it? It's just even as a slight question in this, like that is not as would not have been as common back then as it might even be today.
Right. Yeah. It's. I think that Company does such a like a fun and interesting way of doing that, especially with gosh, what's the couple's name that has the balcony?
The two characters there is Peter and Susan. Yes, Peter and Susan.
Right. So like with Peter and Susan, they get divorced and then they're still living in the same house. And so I feel like Sondheim really plays with that concept of like what actually is being faithful, because I mean that's kind of outside of the scope of this song, but like Peter talks about, well, I wouldn't leave my wife and kids, we just wanted to get a divorce. So like talking about the concept of like what does it even mean to be married to someone or to be faithful to someone.
Well, I actually find it interesting like that you bring up that couple with Peter and Susan, because I feel like they're mentioned obliquely in some of the lyrics, and like they do have a point in the show as a whole, but I always have found it interesting that they themselves never get a song at all.
Right.
Like they're part of some of like the chorus singing and stuff, but as far as like a scene where it sets up and then those characters sing, that never happens. Which I've always found interesting that they're the only couple that doesn't happen with. But I think you're right. I think this is very clearly kind of an extension of that idea that's going to be furthered or has been slightly furthered already in the show. I'm just also going to point out the fact that one of my favorite lines is the saddled with a nut and want to kill me, which he should.
Yeah.
keep going back and forth with that. It's like, I know I'm crazy. Like I'm not going so off the deep end that I don't even realize that that's what's happening, but like I'm still having a freak out here.
Right. I've got the perspective, and the perspective is that I'm crazy, and anyone who wants to marry me, like, should want to kill me, and that, like, you should all go home because I should not be here.
Right.
And that's the perspective I have on the situation. Like, I recognize that I'm the problem here.
So Amy continues on by saying, "Go, can't you go? Why is nobody listening?" I'll turn my page here. "Goodbye, go and cry at another person's wake. If you're quick for a kick, you could pick up a christening. But please, on my knees, there's a human life at stake. Listen, everybody, I'm afraid you didn't hear, or do you want to see a crazy lady fall apart in front of you? It isn't only Paul who may be ruining his life, you know. We'll both of us be losing our identities. I telephoned my analyst about it, and he said to see him Monday, but by Monday I'll be floating in the Hudson with the other garbage. I'm not well, so I'm not getting married. You've been swell, but I'm not getting married. Clear the hall, because I'm not getting married. Thank you all, but I'm not getting married, and don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Go, can't you go? Why is nobody listening? Goodbye, go and cry at some other person's wake. If you're quick for a kick, you could pick up a christening. But please, on my knees, there's a human life at stake. Listen, everybody, I'm afraid you didn't hear, or do you want to see a crazy person fall apart in front of you? It isn't only Paul who may be ruining his life, you know, we'll both of us be losing our identities. I telephoned my shrink, and he said maybe I should come and see him Monday, but by Monday I'll be floating in the Hudson with the other garbage. I'm not well, so I'm not getting married. You've been swell, but I'm not getting married. Clear the hall, because I'm not getting married. Thank you all, but I'm not getting married. And I'll tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today."
Floating in the Hudson with the other garbage. Great New York line, right. I find.
Right. At this point, she is, like, so gotten. Like, she has no perspective on the situation. She's like, okay, well, yeah, this is the end of my life, so I'm going to leave, and you guys all should, too, because this is never happening.
Here's my bone to pick, because there is a line here that I have no idea what they're talking about, and maybe you can shed some light onto it, where it says, "For a kick, you could pick up a christening." What do you think he means, or she means, by "pick up a christening"? Because as far as I understand, a christening is a name, like a naming ceremony. So I don't know what they mean by "pick up a christening."
Right. So I think it's later in the song, she talks about, like, going to a funeral instead and how that would be funny.
Right.
And I think this is, like, a mirror of that, because christening happens in a church.
Oh.
So she's saying, like, well, you're already at a church. Go to some other event. Like, you don't need to come to my wedding. Go pick up a christening or something like that. Like how you would, like, go pick up a movie or something
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so it's kind of like that two sides of the same coin type of thing. Because, yeah, right before this is, like, was it go and cry at another person's wake? So talking
right,
about
exactly.
Like the death of someone, and this is like the beginning of somebody's life, the christening, the naming ceremony type of thing. So, okay, that makes more sense to me, because it's like that phrase kind of always was like, I don't know what that means. Pick up a christening.
Yeah, I think she's just saying, like, you could be anywhere else. You could be a funeral. You could be at a christening. You could be at, like, you know, a baptism, and you would be having more fun than coming to my wedding, which is going to be
right.
Not happening.
This is where I'll give another shout out to Heather Laws, because you can watch her performance of the 2006 revival on YouTube, of all places. It's actually up there. And I've never seen the Beth Howland version. I've only listened to her perform it. But Heather Laws commits to her fall right here. She is on the floor, like, writhing around, like, rolling all over the place while still singing. Like, man, like, that is not easy to do, to be, like, fully committed with your body, like, wailing around as well as singing at the same time. She does a great job in this part specifically.
There have been some productions that even add, like, screams from Amy
right
after the church lady, like, finishes singing or, like, starts singing. And so, like, she hears, like, some other remnant of, like, a wedding that pops up in her head, and she just screams and, like, runs around the stage until it's her verse. It's such commitment to, like, losing your mind on stage.
Yeah, you definitely have some fun that you can play around with this role, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
I want to talk about the analyst part. I mean, we talked a little bit here at the beginning. Oh, no, we didn't. Oh, gosh, my interviews are running together in my mind. Okay. I was about to say, reference something that we did not talk about, but I talked about this morning. I want to talk about the analyst part. I mean, they call the person an analyst, although I would assume that therapist is probably be a more apt description of what that is nowadays, or what we would actually use as the word. From what I understand, like, this would not be that common of a thing at the time. Like, mental health and stuff was only just beginning to be sort of kind of destigmatized, but it wouldn't be for another couple decades, I don't think, until it really started to be something that people would go after. So I just find it interesting that they decided, or Sondheim specifically decided, to actually add that into the lyrics here.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it, you know, slowly throughout the 70s and the early 80s, it became more common with, you know, people like, I guess, Woody Allen and, like, you know, goods and bads, but he did incorporate a bit of that in his filmmaking. But I feel like it kind of became a trope throughout the 70s of, like, the, you know, the New Yorker who, like, has a therapist on speed dial and, you know,
right.
always at, like, they have to, you know, work out all their issues.
Right.
I feel like that kind of became a trope throughout that decade.
Oh, I think so too, right? It's like, oh, they all have therapists there. They're all a little bit like mad and stuff like that. But out here, like we're doing fine. We don't need that sort of help out
exactly.
here.
Exactly. Right. But I think that this was definitely before that.
Sure.
On the beginning of the wave to kind of create that stereotype.
Now we get like really into the meat of this here as we kind of go to the end part of the song. So first the church lady sings, "Bless this bride, totally insane, slipping down the drain, and bless this day in our hearts as it starts to rain." And in most productions, there actually is a sound cue where rain will start to fall down at this point.
Mm-hmm. And of course, rain on a wedding day is bad luck. So.
Yes, that's what they say. This is now classic Sondheim where two characters are going to be singing something completely different from one another. This is what Paul is singing through Amy's section. Paul is saying, "Today is for Amy. Amy, I give you the rest of my life to cherish and to keep you, to honor you forever. Today is for Amy, my happily soon-to-be wife, my adorable wife." But through that entire thing, when Amy is saying, "Go, can't you go? Look, you know I adore you all, but why? Watch me die like Eliza on the ice. Look, perhaps I'll collapse in the apse right before you all, so take back the cake, burn the shoes, and boil the rice. Look, I didn't want to have to tell you, but I may be coming down with hepatitis, and I think I'm going to faint, so if you want to see me faint, I'll do it happily, but wouldn't it be funnier to go and watch a funeral? So thank you all for the 27 dinner plates, 37 butter knives, and 47 paperweights, and 57 candle holders." And then they kind of come together as a back and forth here, where Paul says, "One more thing." Amy says, "I am not getting married." "Amen," softly said, and Amy says, "But I'm not getting married." And then the other people saying, "Amen," with this ring. Amy says, "Still, I'm not getting married." Everyone says, "Amen, I thee wed." And then Amy says, "See, I'm not getting married." Everyone says, "Amen," again. And then together they say, "Let us pray, and we are getting married today." Except Amy says, "I'm not getting married today." And then everyone ends with the "Amen." Saying that out makes absolutely no sense, I just realized. But
right.
When you listen to the clip I just put in, it will make so much more. A classic Sondheim, a lot of stuff going on here. I actually want to first ask, just aurally, like listening to it, how do you approach the section? Like, do you like how this song ends?
I think I do like how it ends. I like that it ends with an amen. And then I really love the scene directly after this song, which we can talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
But I love this as kind of like a, she is absolutely at the end of her rope, and that is not resolved by the end of this song. Like, this is just a song about like a spiral into, you know, sadness and stress and anxiety, and like she is just dealing with that, and that is not resolved by the end of the song. I think that that is unique in the like Broadway songbook. I can't think of another song where like it really is about like anxiety, like not just an emotion, but like as a chronic thing, because throughout the rest of the musical, they kind of reference her, you know, tension and her anxiousness and stuff like that. And so this is like really a personality trait for her. And this is like something that she lives with, and they don't resolve that. They don't be like, oh yeah, she's stressed, but then like, it's all fine by the end of the song. This is like just her like freaking out. And that is the whole song. And then it just ends like that. And Paul is still fine and everyone else is still fine. And she is just like descending. And she is like trying to manage that. And I love how this song ends. I think it's just so good. And then they resolve it in the outside of a song, just in a scene afterwards.
Well, yeah, it's like I've mentioned this before in a couple of episodes ago of how like this show is like the exception that proves the rule in many cases, because in most musical theater rules, quote unquote rules, your character should have gone on a journey. So they start in one place in the song and then end in a different spot. And we never do in this song. We stay in anxiety and it is anxiety for the entire rest of the song. And it's not really resolved at all at the end. I will say that in my mind, I had staged this in my head when I was listening to Company as a teenager. And I thought that probably what was happening here is that she was at the altar and was actually getting married at the very end of the song, like as they ended the chorus and everything. But that is not how it's staged. And I don't think it's ever been staged like that. We end and then there's a scene with her and Bobby right after this, where they kind of, we'll talk about a few different things. But before we get there.
Right. I guess we didn't put into context like where the song is. Basically, Amy comes out with a veil on her head, and the chronologically it's supposed to be like right before she's getting married in like a dressing room or something like that. So Paul and Robert like come in and out and like talk to her before and after the song. But this is like before, and there's like not really any other action other than like her and this church lady and then Paul coming in and out throughout the song.
I think Paul is like looking for cufflinks or something like that. Anyway, something to like finish off his outfit, and she tells him where they are. And Bobby is trying to get them ready to actually go to the wedding, like take them there. Everyone's like waiting at the church, apparently. And then this song happens, and then a bit of a denouement before the end of Act One, because this is basically the depending on what version, the last or the second last song that's in the first act. Before we get there, though, there is one line that I think we need to talk about a little bit, which is the Eliza on the ice line, which she is singing.
I have never known what this line meant.
I guess I never did either. It's one of those things that in context is like, oh yeah, because you're like on the ice and like it's scary, right? Like that's what you feel like on your wedding day. So that's all the context I really need to know. But if you don't know, Eliza on the Ice is a reference to the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, which is written by Harriet Beecher Stowe, and was there was like a stage version, I know, but the lyric specifically is in reference to Eliza is a character trying to escape her slave master, and she goes out onto the ice to try and escape, and then I believe falls through the ice and dies. Spoiler alert for a novel that was written over 100 and something years ago. But that is what they're referring to in this lyric.
Quite the loaded reference to put into a song like this.
Yes, I think so too. Interesting that they would have that reference, and which is why they absolutely do not have that in the 2018 version at all. Because I think, with both you and I, like, we don't get the reference, and probably people younger than us are not going to get the reference either. So, yes, they have
probably people in 1970 did not get the reference.
that could be probably true as well. In the 2018 version, she says instead, "Look, you know I adore you all, but why watch me die when I'm only being nice? Look, perhaps I'll collapse in the apps right before you all." So that's what Sondheim updated it to in the 2018 version.
"All the rest of my days, I'm only being nice. And perhaps I'll collapse in the apps right before you all. So take back the cake, burn the shoes, and boil the rice."
Which I think actually works well and doesn't come with that loaded terms.
Kind of obliquely reference slavery as like marriage as a kind of slavery.
Yes, and I think that's part of the reason why it's out. It's interesting the history of this show, because I mean, we will have already listened to this episode, but I mean, in the original Broadway cast, they use a homophobic slur in a song, which he wrote out of it eventually as well. So he's definitely tinkered with the lyrics here to make it like a little bit more modern, updating it without losing the message behind the lyrics that he's using. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, the aftermath of this song, and then maybe some other responses that people have had. So this, leads right into this scene where Bobby basically proposes marriage himself. She, Amy shuts Paul down and says, "No, like, I am not getting married. Go tell them to leave." Like, that's where this ends. And then Bobby says, "Maybe we should get married." And they have a kind of a scene together.
"Isn't this some world? I'm afraid to get married, and you're afraid not to.
Thank you, Robert. I'm really... It's just that you have to want to marry somebody. Not just somebody. Oh, will you look at that? He went out without an umbrella or anything. I've got to catch him. He'll get pneumonia. I'm getting married. And he's so good, isn't he? So good. I'm the next bride.
Yeah, and Amy has a great line that's,
right.
Oh, Bobby, you can't just want to marry, you have to want to marry somebody, not just somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, she really like emphasizes that word, like the somebody versus somebody, right? Or somebody, right, sometimes right. She'll say, just to like really hammer it home.
Right. And that's the thing that like breaks her out of her spiral. Like she is up until that point spiraling out until she like looks at Bobby and is like, wait, I don't want to marry you. Right. I actually do want to marry Paul.
Yeah, it's just a really nice moment too, because something that's been seeded in the songs, it's been starting to rain, and she's like, oh, mm-hmm. I don't think he took his umbrella. And so she like grabs the umbrella and she's like, I'm getting married today. And so like she rushes out with the umbrella in tow. Yeah.
So sweet.
So I think it all kind of comes together here. I just find like this iconic song inside of this show, like whether you like the show, hate the show, like you're all going to remember this moment where this woman comes on stage, who's like frantically singing about her anxiety about marriage and commitment.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And it is one, I mean, the thrust of this show is all the different relationships Bobby has. There's like friend relationships, romantic relationships, and this whole idea of like, is marriage even something that he himself wants to do as a person? And so it's interesting that we end kind of this act one with that question where he's confronted with it. Is like, oh, I'm seeing what marriage leads to. Is this something I even want to be a part of? Until we eventually get to that being alive moment at the very end. It's like, no, I do want somebody in my life. I want there to be that other person.
Right. And it seems like throughout the show, Bobby is kind of trying to deal with just wanting like parts of people, where he's like, oh yeah, I love this one part of this person. I love that one part of that person. And it feels like at the end of the scene, Amy is like really thinking about Paul as like a whole and complete person who has like needs and that she wants to be with and that she wants to like live with. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that's a very beautiful way to kind of in a very, very small gesture, like showcase that is like really what you need. Like you have to think about a person as a whole person if you're going to marry them, and you have to not just think about like, oh yeah, I love how thin they are and I love how sweet they are and like all these like specific cherry picked attributes that he seems to highlight.
Yeah, no, it's like I mean, this is to reduce it to that cliche, but you're taking the good and the bad, right? When you decide to be a couple, and especially when you make that commitment to be like a married couple, it's like, okay, we are going from two people that are in singlehood to being a couple together. And what we can do, we're going now to do this together. There's stuff I'm bringing, there's stuff you're bringing, but we're going to move forward, hopefully with the same ideas and goals and stuff in mind. So we are now creating this new thing where we're both involved in this. And it's not just you or I anymore. And I think kind of summed up beautifully here too.
Right. And not just like part of you or part of me. Like, you know, I have to be there for you, even if you're on the rain. And that means I have to run out into the rain.
Right.
You know, like, you know, there are unpleasant moments, but like that, if you want to be there for that, then that's like how you know. And like, that's what marriage is about.
Talking about some of the performances, I believe this is from the original London cast, where a lot of the original Broadway actors came over into London. So it's The Guardian who wrote about the show. And this is what the writer said. They wrote, "Company boasts the most astonishing score of any Stephen Sondheim work, and at the same time, a book demonstrating an almost complete lack of commitment to coherent narrative." True enough. Adding that, they added that it has a large dollop of irony. The result is numbers such as The Little Things You Do Together and Getting Married Today that are sheer bliss to listen to, but often, unexpectedly, disappointing and distancing in performance. I guess, not to throw this writer under the bus necessarily, but is that something you agree with? Is this something that's better listened to than watched?
I mean, I've never seen a live production of it, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of sounds like the writer missed the point, right? Like, the point is not to have a... It's, like, not coherent narrative. That's not the point of this show.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like literally is like the anti-Broadway show in many ways. Like there's no actual narrative going on here. It's just a bunch of one acts.
No one
is coming to like these big realizations until the very end of the show. So it's like, yeah, it's very different than what you're expecting as a theater piece.
Right. There's like no action. It kind of reminds me of like a Richard Linklater movie where you just like sit and watch people talk on stage. And like there's no plot, there's like no rising action, like it's just like people talking about their feelings.
I mean, this is maybe why I'm so excited for the Richard Linklater Merrily We Roll Along movie to come out in 20 years time. But
yeah,
I mean, this is what I always say to people, because I'm a big Richard Linklater fan, and I've always been a Sondheim fan. But it's like, if I go and watch one of his movies and someone asks me about it, it's like, oh, is it good? Should I go and watch it? I'm like, oh, I loved it. You'll hate it. You should not go and watch this movie.
Right. Yeah.
But it was great for me. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like for this. Like, this is not about a narrative. It's about, like, an emotional through line and watching this one person have character growth and not about, like, anything else that's happening. And you get some good laughs, and, like, there's some great moments.
Mm-hmm,
and there's some beautiful and incredible and, like you said, iconic songs. But that's, like, not, you know, the point of the show.
That's right.
A narrative.
I think this is also, I mean, absolutely Sondheim lent lyrics to Gypsy already and some other great female roles, but now that he's writing both music and lyrics, I really feel like this is the beginning of that iconic song choices where Sondheim can give actresses just phenomenal material to work with, especially when we get through the next couple of shows where we go into Follies and A Little Night Music. Like, there are some great songs that we're getting for women, and I think this is one of the beginning parts of that, where this is such a great piece to show off someone's acting talent, singing talent, and commitment to this role. It really does, I find, any performance I've watched, even if it's just a recording of it, like, it brings down the house every single time. Like, people are like, this is great. Yeah.
Right. Right. I think there was a documentary made about, like, the first, I think maybe the first staging of this show. Mm. And there's, like, this video of Stephen Sondheim trying to get a cast recording of this song.
Yes, yeah, the documentary and about the actual recording of the cast recording, yeah.
Right. And, like, the actress just looks so terrified. Like, the first take, she's like, I mean, because it's, like, the first time anyone's going to hear this show if you haven't, like, gone and seen it on Broadway. And she's, like, defining what that song will be. And it's just, like, one of those songs that, like, she knows is going to, like, continue to be one of the best songs for, like, female vocalists on Broadway.
Well, Hallie, thank you so much for joining me here today. This has been great. I guess we probably should have just, well, what I'll do here in post is I'll just make sure that the BPMs have been upped so that we're just speaking like chipmunks for the entire time. But for people who want to stay in contact with you, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, you can find my podcast in any podcatcher or on social media at One to Grow On. And then on social media, it's One to Grow On Pod. And then I am on Twitter at Hallie_Casey, which is Hallie_Casey.
Perfect. Thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thanks to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, and to Inventures this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere else you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Marry Me a Little, at least just enough. As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. For now, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now. All right, let's try this out. I don't have high hopes, but let's try this out. I'm only going to do the first part, though. I'm only going to do the first section, because otherwise, literally, we would be here all night. Pardon me, is everybody here? Because if everybody's here, I'd like to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do. I know the word of it to Paul. Remember, Paul, you know the man I'm going to marry, but I'm not, because I wouldn't ruin anything as wonderful as he is. Thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today. Oh. I didn't think I'd be able to get through that. That was not very much in tune. And I think, whatever. Cast me, you cowards.